determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And our regularly scheduled guest is not here, and we have no means of calling him. He ordinarily calls us. That's Bob Chapman. So let's just, of course, take an issue, and we really don't have anything prepared, so we're going to depend upon you giving us a call. It was this last week when it was reported that a professor of lizardology, he's an herbologist, he studies lizards, and he teaches at a school in Texas, and he was giving a talk to a group of scientists in Texas. These are some of the leading scientists at his university. However, before they actually started the talk, why they discontinued the video and stopped all recordings, and then the professor got up and began to talk about how he looked at the world. And his contention was that there are just too many people in the world. After all, they're using up the natural resources. We have global warming. We have all sorts of social problems because of the press of people. And something has got to be done to limit the population. And so the basic theme was that perhaps if we could aerosolize Ebola, this would certainly kill off a large segment of the population. Maybe avian flu or perhaps something else would begin to limit the population, but we really were going to have to limit about 90% of the population of the world. And basically what was really a little distressing to one of the people who was there was that when the doctor, the lizardologist, or whatever they call him, completed his program, he got a standing ovation from the professors that were there. And it's really rather startling to realize that so many people have so little value for human life. Now, there is a population control agenda. There really are people out there who honestly believe that there are too many people in the world, and the best thing that we could do would be to markedly limit the population. And if the figure 90%, eliminating 90% of the population, seems a little outlandish, let me simply point out that this has been actually suggested many, many times. I know one of the most difficult concepts that I had as a physician when I was involved with trying to get organized medicine to treat the AIDS epidemic as if it were a public health issue rather than as a homosexual civil rights issue. One of the hardest things I had to accept was the fact that there really are people out there who want to kill off literally hundreds of millions of people and want to use AIDS at least as part of this genocidal agenda. It was almost beyond the pale for me to accept the fact that anything could be that evil. It took me a long time to realize that there really are people with a different worldview who have a different agenda. Now, I'd like to know what you think about, do we have too many people in the world? What should we do about all the people in the world? Do the Chinese have the right sort of approach? The Chinese certainly have the one-child policy, and that has been largely funded here by the United States, International Planned Parenthood, and up until recently we were giving considerable money. In fact, we spend $400 million a year, the United States does, on international planned population, or they call it international family planning, but it is really simply a population control. Well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Do you think there are too many people in the world? Should we come up with a program for killing them off? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up, so if you're out there, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, you know, many people out there find it difficult to believe, for instance, that AIDS was produced in a laboratory. And in fact, initially, I thought that was a rather ridiculous concept, and there have been a lot of material that's been put out through the years to lead people away so that they would never ask that a very important question, that is, where did AIDS come from? one of the approaches was the Dr. Duesberg approach. Dr. Duesberg's approach was, well, there isn't any AIDS epidemic. It's all created. Certainly most of the people who die of AIDS die because, well, of the treatment they're giving. And certainly AZT is a terribly poisonous drug, and that's what people are dying from. And there's an element of truth in that. AZT is a terrible drug. It does produce many of the symptoms and signs of AIDS but that we associate with AIDS, but it, certainly the longevity of many of the people was extended when they did get on AZT, although we do not have a good treatment for it. Well, let's go to Bart, who's calling in from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to give you a call tonight. I have, I'm not surprised that this information is coming more forward into the public realm regarding large-scale genocide of human beings on this planet. It is inevitable. Many people I respect in the truth movement, such as yourself and others, have said for a long time that as we go into the full global takeover of the New World Order, they will have to run the last 100 yards naked. You understand what they mean by that phrase? In other words, it will be seen. I believe there's even a passage in the scripture regarding the end times where it is said that, I'm not exactly sure how it's phrased, but I believe it's some paraphrasing, all information will be known, or all facts will be known by everybody. And so this is part of that. I remember when I was in the New Age movement, a lot of the recommended literature that we were given to read and the available literature quite often painted this beautiful, magnificent picture of a world in perfect harmony with very few people on it, green grass and butterflies everywhere and birds chirping and room and clean living and abundance for all with very few people on it. But they never discuss how we get from point A to point B. We're in the world with very few people on it, and I think the big surprise is going to come is when the New Agers, who have supported this idea all along, suddenly realize that they themselves...
Hold that thought right there, Mars. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, finish up, and I think that we've probably got Bob Chapman on the line, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to finish up by saying that the New Agers are going to be quite surprised to find that they're not going to be exempt from this population reduction plan themselves.
I think you're absolutely right. God bless, and thanks so much for calling. All right. We've got Kevin calling from Austin. Kevin, our guest is on. Did you have a quick comment to make before we put our regularly scheduled guest on?
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Stan, thank you for tuning in. When I heard Alex Jones was talking about that professor in UT, and I've heard some of these guys that are biologists and stuff, and their contempt for human beings, the way they look at us like we're bacteria, you know, we are a disease on the planet, and I've heard it before, but I saw the movie V for Vendetta, and that's part of the story is they release a virus on the population. And people are hearing, and a lot of the information came from you, because you're the one who talked about the Georgia Guidestones a long time ago with the 500 million people being the goal.
Right.
So thank you. Because it's coming out.
Well, thank you so very much for calling, okay. Kevin. I think it's so important people understand there really is a master plan. And, of course, the coming war, I think, is going to be a very, very large part of that. And there's no question at all. It's not simply a limited attack on Iran that we're going in for. We're going to, within the very near future, precipitate a World War III and a nuclear exchange. Our leaders have been unilaterally disarming the United States for years. They have steadfastly refused to have any sort of a anti-ballistic missile defense for the United States, whereas Russia has a very advanced one. We have no civil defense system here. We have no means of protecting ourselves. There are effective medicines that would protect our citizens from the ravages of radiation illness. The government refuses to stockpile it. Why would you leave your nation defenseless and unilaterally disarm when your enemies are arming? It doesn't make sense unless there's another agenda there. Anyway, anything else you'd like to say, Kevin?
All right, I'm just listening.
All right, God bless you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless you.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think we have Roger calling us on line 6. We thought that was Bob Chapman, but if you're out there across America, give us a call. We'd like to know what you think about the subject. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, okay, Bob's not with you quite yet. Yeah, you recall, I forget the name of the woman who wrote the book as to how arguing that the Earth can support using current technologies at least 20 times the present population.
Was that Jacqueline Kaysen? She had written extensively on this, Dr. Kaysen.
Yeah, I forget. And that was with no environmental degradation using current technologies. That's not to say you couldn't support a lot more with cleaner technology still. And you recall in Dr. Peter Beckman's book, The Health Hazards of Not Going Nuclear, as to, you go back into the 10s and the 20s, when you had all that horrible pollution from all that coal dust where you couldn't even set your laundry out without it coming back in black after it got dried off. So people think that, you know, we're in the worst of times environmentally, and we've just never been cleaner in reality.
Well, I think that what they're trying to do, of course, is if people who live in the city have this feeling of being crowded, and yet if you fly across the country, you know, as far as you can see, there's just open space there. There's plenty of room for people, and we have the ability to create the food for them and the other products for them. But there really are people who have a genocidal agenda. They hate humanity, and they would really like to kill off the majority of the people and bring this country back to the way it was before the evil white man came. And if anybody doubts that, they really need to get the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that came out of the Second Earth Summit. You can actually purchase that. We don't carry it, but it was put out by Cambridge University Press. It was called the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. Now, we've summarized that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, but this is actually what they advocate. Taking the world back the way it was here in the United States before the evil white man came. And certainly if they can't get rid of all the people, then they're going to have to just lower our living standards. And that's really what globalization right now is really all about, is a conscious effort to lower our living standards and impoverish our people. But right along with that, of course, there is a genocidal agenda. And we can talk. We'll be talking a little bit more about that. Anything else you'd like to say, Roger?
Yeah, if you have time, I did want to ask you a more challenging question on something you've argued over time. And that is on the matter, like you make the case like that Nikola Tesla and perhaps others would not have developed their science apart from knowledge imparted from demons, or you could go back to Euclid was the Greek mathematician, etc. Wouldn't have developed trigonometry as a development from his own mind.
Because I've used the example of Pythagoras, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, but certainly many of the great minds of the past have tapped into the supernatural knowledge, the supernatural power.
Well, that could be, I was uncomfortable with that as being more like speculative, that these people wouldn't have developed that on their own. Could I say then, like, you take somebody like George Washington Carver, who was very prodigious as a scientist on what I assume was a stone knives and bearskin budget, and a thoroughly Christian, was he not?
He absolutely was. But if you ever read what George Washington Carver said, he attributed his accomplishments to our Lord. And I think that you can tap into our Lord's knowledge, or you can tap into the devil's knowledge. Which one do you want to tap into?
Well, but is not seminal knowledge developed just with God's broad and general gifts?
Yes, certainly. It can be, but then, of course, it can come from the dark side, too. So you want to be sure where you're getting your message and your knowledge. In fact, you know, there was a wonderful author. When I was first getting started back in the 1960s, I used to love the books written by Taylor Caldwell. The most amazing adventure stories you've ever read, intricate, and of course, he talked a lot about God and talked about conservative philosophy, and But I didn't realize that Taylor Caldwell wasn't a Christian. In fact, Taylor Caldwell didn't know where her stories came from. They just came to her out of no place. And as she grew older, she was really intrigued by, where do these stories that I write come from? And she actually went to see a medium. And there's a book called In Search of a Soul, I think it was. I've forgotten, but it was written by a man who went with her on this quest, trying to find out where these ideas came from. And they may very well have come from our Lord. But she didn't understand that, and she had never accepted him. And I will tell you, I'm firmly convinced that God can channel ideas into us, but I'm also certain that the devil can channel ideas into us. We just have to be certain where we're getting our ideas and our thoughts.
I had thought, from what I had, some that I had read of hers, that she was a rock-ribbed Roman Catholic.
No, she really wasn't. She had was not really a true Christian at all. And, I mean, she was actually going to mediums to try to figure out where the ideas were coming from. Now, as far as Pythagoras was concerned, Pythagoras lived about 500 years before Christ, and he came from a town on on the east coast of Italy. And he actually traveled to the Middle East and spent a great deal of time there, time to tap into the mystery religions and study the mystery religions. He came back then to Italy and established a school for the mystery religions, and then of course hypothesized that A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Now, maybe he just sat down and thought that up on his own. I don't think he did, because his major obsession was the mystery religions.
Would Dr. Stan, would we have any biblical or empirical warrant for asserting that either demons or unfallen angels would have any physicality whatsoever? I think not there being spiritual beings, but necessarily, say, knowledge of, say, the atom or other aspects of the physical sciences.
I really can't answer that thing, but I believe that there is a great deal of hidden knowledge out there that you can tap into. But of course, some of this we should not be tapping into.
Well, my point in asking that was, not having physicality or necessarily even knowledge that they would get human beings to do things with that knowledge, where would be the warrant for asserting that demons could interbreed with man?
No, the only thing we know about this whole subject comes, you know, from the book of Genesis, talking about the Nephilim, and of course those were fallen angels, brother. There's distinction between fallen angels and demons is... that's sort of a theoretical one, but we're told that the fallen angels did mate with women, and of course it created these the Nephilim. Because at that time, the society was so evil that God decided just to wipe out all humanity and save one family, and that was Noah.
I did look up that word Nephilim, which is translated giants roughly in various places. There's up to 11 different definitions. And one thing it means for certain is of renown or remarkable. So it's not necessarily giantism or a particular attribute that was translated in one place giant and another place a different meaning to that word.
Okay, fine. Well, anything else you'd like to cover?
Yeah, I just had a problem with asserting dogmatically that the sons of God going into the daughters of man would not have perhaps meant the God-fearing line married from the not God-following line. That's how I took it.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks so much, Roger. Bye-bye, Roger. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd like to know what you think about population control. Is it a problem? Should we be concerned about it? Are there really people out there who would like to kill off most of the people on Earth and would create new diseases to do that? We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we've been talking about population control and what's so difficult for... I know it was very difficult for me to believe initially that AIDS was a man-made disease. Now, of course, we have come into contact with a number of people through the years who have been in contact with the scientists who actually created that, created the new diseases. One of them is a book called Full Disclosure, written, I believe, by Gary Null. And Gary had one of the scientists who was then part of the original project come to him. He was dying of pancreatic cancer, and he told him the whole story of how these people worked with the CIA, these scientists worked with the CIA, to create this new immune disease, this new disease for which there was no immune response. We do have, of course, Dr. MacArthur's testimony, and we'd be glad to give anybody out there who'd like a copy of that a copy. It was in July of 1969 when David MacArthur actually appeared before the House Appropriations Committee for Military Affairs and requested, $10 million to create a brand new disease for which there'd be no immune response. And he went on to say that some people thought that they really shouldn't produce that because it would become a new means of mass killing. But they wanted the $10 million, and of course it was just about... He said it'd take him about 10 years to develop the new disease, and we know that about 10 years later were the first cases of acquired immune deficiency disease in San Francisco. Now, it wasn't identified as a disease, until 1981, but the doctors were noticing this in the homosexual population, the Kaposi sarcoma, the altered immune response. They just didn't put it all together. They didn't understand what this new disease was. But it was there about 10 years after Dr. MacArthur testified to that effect. Then, of course, Dr. Garth Nicholson and his book we do carry called Project Daylily, and Dr. Garth Nicholson, certainly one of the preeminent scientists of our country, who held two professorships at the MB Anderson Clinic in Texas, who actually was on the editorial board of at least 10 scientific journals and edited a couple of them on his own. And Dr. Garth Nicholson has told me personally that scientists who are part of the project to create these horrible new diseases, specifically AIDS among them, but other diseases as well, had come to him, but of course they were feared to go public. They feared for their lives. Those of you who heard Steve Quayle talk about this, and you can go to his website, I think there are about 130 scientists that have died, and probably most of them were killed because they knew too much. And when you're playing with totally evil people, why, you can get into real problems. And I believe that AIDS is a created disease. There's not one AIDS epidemic. There are 8 different types of AIDS. There are different subtypes of the disease. There's HIV-1, there's HIV-2. Under HIV-1, there's type M and type O. And under M, there's subtype A, B, C, D, E, and I believe F. So there are all of these different types. They have not changed since they were first introduced into the world's population. There's a different type, subtype in Thailand than there is in Eastern Africa, than there is in Western Africa, than there is here in the United States. And most people find it so difficult to believe that anything could be this evil. But, of course, if you've read my Population Control Agenda monograph or my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you will realize there really are people out there who are totally unconcerned about human suffering, and of course they are dedicated to killing off a large part of the world's population. We'll be back here in just a moment. We have Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Well, hi, Dr. Stan. If you're out there, I'd like to give us a call. We're talking on population control. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hey, Ray, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I just had a small question. The Biodiversity Treaty was created at the Earth Summit, was it?
The whole idea of that, there are basically three things that came out of
Did it include cultural diversity? What I'm saying is, this whole thing about letting illegals into the country and forming a society where we're all mixed together and everything, who's responsible for that? I mean, who is it? Is it Gorbachev or Is it just a group of people in a government, or
it is the globalists? It's basically the people who believe in doing away with national sovereignty and the destruction of this nation. And what they really want to do, of course, is change our culture. They want a multicultural, multilingual society. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to play one group against the other. They want to bring in a lot of people who really don't really want to be Americans. They just want all the benefits of living here. They don't want to assimilate into our country. And certainly they do not understand what America is all about.
They don't understand America.
But it's really so that you can create chaos, and out of the chaos will come the dictatorship. So it is the globalists, and of course they are the people within the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome. But also you begin getting into the secret societies, the Rosicrucians, the New Age, the Theosophists, the Skull and Bone Society, and of course the Bohemian Grove, and all of these, they're dedicated to a power elite controlling the world.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the Masons probably would be involved in it too at the upper levels probably.
Right.
But, you know, and that's interesting about the Masons. You know, our dollar bill has the eye in the pyramid and the capstone and the unblinking eye staring at you is, that happened. The dollar bill changed, right, during the 1920s, or was it?
No, that was actually put on the back of the dollar bill
in
1935.
And
it was put there.
During Roosevelt's time.
Right, and it was put there. Roosevelt was a 32nd degree Mason, but who was responsible for it was Henry Wallace, who was deeply involved in the occult and in theosophy, and, of course, he was also a Mason.
But before that, the dollar bill, it used to be a gold, they used to have gold sovereigns,
used to be gold certificates, right.
Yeah, gold certificates, and they didn't have that garbage on the,
they did not.
On the dollar bill, and it's frightening, really, this Novus Ordo Seclorum.
No, of course, what you really have to understand is that this is what it's really all about. This is the major driving force behind everything going on today, is this desire to complete the pyramid. If you notice, there's an unfinished pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, and then the triangle hovering over the top, but it's not in place. That's the capstone.
It's not completed.
That's so right, but that, when they have their world dictatorship under Lucifer, then it will be completed, and in their way of thinking, the capstone will settle into place, we will live in this wonderful utopian society that has been the goal of the secret society since their inception. And we're talking about thousands of years. This goes back to ancient Babylon and Assyria and Egypt. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, was picked up by the Greek philosophers, Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. And that's why, of course, Alexander the Great set out to conquer the world, because he was a disciple of Aristotle, and he was deeply involved in the mysteries.
You know, the Novus Ordo has even the Catholic Church uses that as the new mass is called the Novus Ordo. So I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, is there some connection between these people in the high up in the Catholic Church? Which I'm a part of.
Don't feel bad. They're in the Protestant church, too. They've infiltrated all of the churches.
They've infiltrated all of them.
Oh, anyway, God bless. Anything else you want to ask before we let you go?
Gorbachev
indoctrinated into, or inducted into a secret Masonic lodge in Great Britain.
Whoa.
And this is really where this all comes from. Okay, thanks very much.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to, who do we have here? Is this Dan? Who do you have on the line?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Oh, hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
Well, I'm just Sandy. And is this open line?
Yes, it's open line. Of course, we were talking about population control, but if you had something you wanted to say, go ahead and say it.
Well, this has been on my mind, especially in Santa Cruz County. The planning department put a proposed ordinance up to the Board of Supervisors, and it's called Neighborhood Compatibility. And this is a real important ordinance, because compatibility is what they're saying is when the homes are being built in a particular neighborhood. Are we going into a break?
I don't know where we are. You can hang on. We'll get you in just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're really talking about population control. But Jeannie called in, and she wanted to talk about a local ordinance. So anyway, there's an ordinance that they want compatibility, and so basically what will this entail, Jeannie?
Well, it'll be the same design of all the homes that's being built now. And also, it's called non-conforming use. And if, say, a home burns down or if there's an earthquake, then that home is in non-conforming use. In other words, they can't rebuild it. And this is so important because what they snuck in, and nobody else has come across this, is they're going to change the definition of neighborhood. And how they're going to do neighborhoods is they're going to break apart, say, a city, say, a SoCal, and they're going to have different units within the city. And the neighborhoods will be defined by geographical boundaries.
Well, because, Jeannie, it's all part of their effort to control private property. Private property is the very essence of freedom. Take away private property while you take away freedom. And we have a fascist element. Well, made up of petty bureaucrats working within our planning commission and really all across the country, but it's probably worse here than most places. And they're just simply going to take away our freedom. And, you know, unless the people get organized and do something, why, we will continue losing our freedom. So I share your concern about it.
This actually ties in with the World Bank water policy on the water basins, because they're being defined as geographical boundaries, not political boundaries. And this is what they're doing to the cities and the towns. They're actually breaking them apart in units and breaking the political boundaries of the cities and the counties and the state boundaries.
Well, of course, it's all part of this fascist concept that we have people who know what's best for us.
Now, there's an interesting letter.
Jeannie, I got to go because I got a whole board full of...
You do?
Why don't you wrap up real quick here?
I can't wrap up. I'll talk to you later.
God bless. Okay. Well, we've got Dan, who's been waiting very, very patiently from Bellflower, California. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Okay. I heard that you're coming to the Freedom Forum.
I'm going to be at the Freedom Forum tomorrow night, right?
Oh, well, that'd be great. I think I should be able to make it down there. And maybe I'll be able to, you know, get to shake your hand or something. But
okay, we'll look forward to it.
Yeah, I'm going to look forward. I thank God for your ministry. It's a blessing. And I'd like to tell everybody out there that Dr. Stan's book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, is very well written.
Hold that thought for just a moment here, and that'll let you put... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we've got on the line Dan from Bellflower, California, and he wanted to put a plug-in for my book, so I'm going to let him do that. Go ahead.
Yes, and it's a very good book. I happen to have the benefit, I guess if you want to call it that, of studying and learning. I probably knew about maybe 70% of what was in there, but that's from 10 years of study, and I don't even come close. I'm not trying to compare myself to Dr. Stan, but that book, especially for the layman, for the person that might be new to some of this information, that book is very well written, and then also for others that have studied it for a while. So I recommend everybody to get a hold of the book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, by Dr. Stan, and read it. It's really good, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, God bless you. Thanks so much. I'm going to have to let you go because we finally got our guest for this evening. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
I hope to see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, okay. You too. God bless.
And let's go to Rita calling here. Hi, Rita. How are you doing?
Hi. Am I on the air?
You're on the air, but our guest just showed up. But anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to make this really quick. I was in California about 10 years ago. I started something called Concerned Citizens Anonymous, and we got a guy named Gunther Rosbacher and his wife to talk at our church, and I found out a whole lot of things, but I've gotten way far into something else since then, something called The Game, and I went to Europe, and I actually helped close down churches and close the National Bank of Holland, and people don't know about me over here now, but there's a process that we're in, and it's about diversity and tolerance.
Okay.
And we have gotten that thing messed up, you know.
We sure
we've
do.
We've got to divide that concept.
All right,
so we
fine.
Can survive.
Well, God bless you, and thanks very much for calling.
All right,
Rita.
Thank
Let's
you
go
very
to
much.
Bob Chapman. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine, but it was almost destined that we wouldn't talk again.
Well,
my phone's and yours. And finally, I get through.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. For our listeners, this is Bob Chapman, one of my favorite guests from the International Forecaster. Well, Bob, tell us what's going on. I had actually emailed you and asked you about this rumor we'd heard about the reddish new currency that's being issued in Europe, and you hadn't heard anything at all about it, and then you emailed me back and said that at least there are some people are reporting that the U.S. is beginning to issue a different colored currency overseas. Is there any truth to that, or is this just a rumor?
No, it's true. And I had previously gotten reports of it in Mexico, in South and Central America. In fact, there's an awful lot of the bills in Mexico, and I've seen them myself. And also, right after you asked me, it was just prophetic that I got an email, and people were telling me that they had gone to a bank in Ireland and asked for the bills, and they had them. And so they're over there as well.
All right, what is the significance? Are they going to come up with a two-tiered monetary system? Certainly the stability of the currency determines the stability of the nation. And, you know, this is what the Federal Reserve Board was really all about. They were supposed to provide us a federal currency so that we would have, you know, could protect our savings from confiscation through inflation. And they seem to be doing exactly the opposite. They put us into a terrible situation. And now it appears that they're going to begin issuing a different colored money, a redback. And the fact we're not hearing about this here means that this is being done very surreptitiously. They don't want the American people to know how bad the economic situation really is.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. What the final goal is remains to be seen. We don't know. We're guessing. But... if they follow the precepts of what went down during the mid-1930s, the British disowned all of the currency, their currency, the pound, that foreigners were holding. They just got caught holding the bag. And I think what's going to happen again is that they want to draw out all of the old bills and replace them with these reddish or rose or colored bills, and I think that they want to stick them again.
In other words, leave all the people throughout the rest of the world who've trusted the American dollar and will simply impoverish them.
Right, and another thing, too, is that on the flip side of that, they may, and there's been discussions on this, try to devalue the U.S. currency, which is not pinkish or reddish in color, and they may call that in and issue new currency, and at the same time, for 10 old ones, they'll give you one new one or something like that, and it's a way of devaluing.
And of course, what you do is really you destroy the value of people's life savings.
Exactly. That's why gold and silver are so important, because in a hyperinflationary environment, which we're going into, they'll both do extraordinarily well. When the hyperinflation peters out and we head into deflation and depression, you won't want to be in silver because it's very heavily commercially used, and you want to just stay in gold coins. But I believe that this is where we're headed. And, you know, the indications are, just as an example, as you know, and I don't know if the audience does, that Ron Paul has submitted legislation to force the Federal Reserve to continue to publish M3. And I won't go into what it is. It's a combination of financial things that go into a grouping. And it's important to know for people who are involved in economics and analysis, because it shows how much the money supply and credit is increasing. And that was announced, I'll say, 4 months ago, and it became a reality two weeks ago. And from the time that, and I don't have the exact figures right in front of me because they're being typed, but I think the price of gold has been up 28% since the announcement was made. And just in the last couple of weeks, it's moved up 8 or 9%. And I think people throughout the world are realizing that the Fed is trying to hide what they're doing, and not only what they've been doing, what they're going to do in the future. And the last figures we got were outrageous. For the 3 weeks prior to the end of reporting on M3, which is prior to a couple of weeks ago. The increase in money and credit was 26% in that 3 week period. Now, there have been times that the Fed has increased money supply and credit by 15%, but over the last 5 years, they've increased it by an average about 10 to 12%. It's hard to tell exactly. Now, what's even worse is if you go to the last week's international forecast, you'll see all of the figures for all the major governments, and they're doing the same thing.
In other words, they're going to destroy the currencies all throughout the world.
That's right. And that's one, you know, but I'll tell you, the situation in Iraq, number one, has set the elitists back 5 years. It's a disaster. The elitists, the people who run the whole show, were the ones who instructed George and the neocons to go forward and do what they did. Now, they never expected it could be such a mess made of it. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I talked about Zbigniew Brzezinski, that's a mouthful, and he's one of the top, if not the top, planner for the elitists. And he went on to say that these people in the White House are going to be the dumbest people around. I mean, they've taken his plan and turned it upside down and made a failure out of it. And so because of that, I think they've had to make a deal on Iran. And I think the deal is that you don't open the bourse and trade oil in euros, and you stop contributing to what's going on in Iraq via the Shiites, and we won't incinerate you with nuclear weapons. And that's because now the elitists desperately want to get out of Iraq, and they want to get it out within a year to a year and a half. And that's why you didn't see an attack on Iraq. And, you know, all of these things flow together. And, you know, that's why the international forecaster is anywhere between 40 and 70 pages every week, because I try to weave a mosaic and bring all these things in together so people can see the picture.
Well, the picture really looks to me very, very bleak financially. I think, of course, I always like to refer to the price of gold and silver as the canary in the mine shaft. And when they start moving up, especially as rapidly as they have in the last couple of weeks, why, you better watch out, because there's got to be some poison gas out there someplace. Or something deadly is going to happen.
Well, I've got to talk about one of the things that really terrifies me. And that is the subversion of what's going on now in regard to immigration, illegal immigration.
All right, go ahead.
And I have talked about it in the last two issues, that as I see more and more of what's going on, it's a classic situation. And a classic situation that can be turned into a major problem. And you have all these people marching around saying that they should be made American citizens because they come here and work and they help us and they work hard and by and large they're good people. And that's true. The only thing is we have rules and the rules have to be abided by. The corporate America who wants slave labor doesn't run our country. The American people do. although you wouldn't think so. And I think what the elitists are going to do, I think because the American people are so strongly against amnesty, I think they're going to turn these demonstrations into riots. And once they do that and everything gets upside down with people getting killed, people who are innocent bystanders are going to get killed by police, by people who agree with illegal immigration. And it's a perfect excuse to allow the elitists, our government, to implement a martial law situation.
Well, of course, the whole thing is created. The whole thing is contrived. They know exactly what they're doing. And this is sort of like a replay of what happened in the 60s with the civil rights issue. That was orchestrated from the very beginning, you know, and it was an effort to change the structure of our society and give the government more control over our lives. And I think that's just what's going to happen now.
Well, I'm afraid it is. And the people who are illegal aliens and those who demonstrate with them, they're going to pay a terrible price because they're going to be getting hit from both sides. And they're not violent people. And I think that it's going to be terribly nasty. It's going to totally ruin our relations with Latin America. They're bad now. They're going to get worse. In fact, earlier today I wrote an article about U.S. foreign relations in Latin America since the early 60s, and I was intimately involved in it, and I won't go into it on the program, but there's lots of things I know that people don't know, and that's going to give them an excuse, and once that happens, and they button down the country with martial law, then they'll start collecting people like you and I, Stan, and we will be in internment camps. And of course they'll throw in suspects who are supposedly terrorists, which means they'll round up anybody who sounds like they got a name that is connected to the Islamic religion, and they'll throw them in the can too. And that's why Halliburton's building these camps right now. They're getting ready.
And I think we have to ask, why are they building internment camps in America? I mean, where is the outcry? People say it can't happen here, but I always like to point out that the same occult, a spiritual force that motivated Adolf Hitler and the Nazi movement is alive and well in the United States. And after all, the President of the United States belongs to a secret society that originated in Bavaria back in 1832. And the Nazi movement traces its roots to exactly the same source. And that is why, I believe, in the tomb where the skull and bones meets back at Yale University, the walls are decorated with swastikas. And not that they support Nazism, they support the source from which the Nazi movement came. There really are people who have an entirely different worldview because they worship a different god.
Well, they were the ones who planned and financed National Socialism in Germany. I had the opportunity to talk to a number of counterintelligence people in Europe back in the 1950s all the way through the 1980s until they died, who were within the Nazi movement, and they were all colonels or generals, and some of them are very well known. I won't go into all the names, but I mean, I knew these people very, very well, and they were all hoodwinked. They never understood what had been done to them. But the evolution of, we'll call it the reign of Adolf Hitler, began at Versailles. It was planned right there and then. And they did it through outrageous reparations and then hyperinflation. And then the setting was set for the people to say, oh, who's going to come and save us? And the young man named Adolf Hitler did.
And of course, we have a letter we found among Colonel House's papers from Ambassador Dodd, who was the American ambassador to Germany in 1936. And he's writing to Colonel House, and he said, why are the 100 American corporations here in the United States funding of the rebuilding of the Nazi, pardon me, of the German war machine, the German army. I mean, nobody wants a war. We just got through a war. And do the people back in America know that these American corporations are not going to make any profit because they can't get the money out of the country? Why are they rebuilding up the German war machine? Well, you know, of course, the average American doesn't understand that we created the German war machine. Bob, do you want to stay on into the next hour? Maybe we could put our...
Sure, that's fine.
I'm going to ask our producer if he wouldn't mind calling our regularly scheduled guest and tell him we'll call him about 9:30. Hopefully he'll let me know he got that message, and then we'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. And
apologize to the other guests for me.
Apologize to the other guests.
Hold your phones, and I live a long ways away from you.
I know you do. Well, we are glad you could get on. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Bob, that's the international forecaster, and when we get back, we'll let you tell people how to get your letter. Well, Bob, go ahead. We've got 3 minutes before we let you wrap. Before I wrap up this hour, and then we go on to the next one. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, in respect of what's going on in Washington, we were talking about National Socialism, and it's exactly the same thing that we've got now. Corporatist interests, which are working with government, and they are the ones who are running things. This model actually was pioneered by a man who was really a Marxist, Benito Mussolini. And he wasn't dumb. He was a teacher, a professor. And he put together the methods of melding corporate, in his country it was Italy, corporate Italy within the political structure. And a lot of what he came up with eventually was used in Germany, and of course it's being used in the United States today. And people just don't know it. They don't see it. They're not told about it. I started talking about this phenomenon just after George Bush got elected the first time. I had voted for him. I never expected to happen what happened. And I finally came to realize exactly what they were up to. And actually, this is nothing new. It was going on during the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was in office. I just never realized, and one of the real reasons I used to have all these terrible problems, and still do, with the United States government, they were trying to shut me up. In fact, in the article I wrote about Latin America, in 1984, 85, somewhere back in there, I wrote an article about, and I had got this information from someone who was in a sensitive position, and I published it, and it was about 23 Soviet helicopters that had been shot down by surface-to-air missiles, which the Contras weren't supposed to have. And I said that had happened and that the Russians were going to pull out. Well, the State Department went ballistic. And ever since that time, I've been considered very, very bad. Starting in 1967, when they started to harass me, I was bad. Now I'm as bad as you can get. And so these kinds of things have been going on a long time. We just haven't been able to, previous to this administration, identify them for what they were. I should
hold
have
that thought right
sooner.
There, Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Bob, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the International Forecaster?
Yes, you can call a toll-free number, and that number is 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. And we'll send you out a copy either via email or in a hard copy. We publish on Saturday email and twice a month in hard copy. It's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues. We also have a site, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International forecaster.com.
All right, fine. And certainly we always look forward to the newsletter. I take it by email, read it when it comes in. Fascinating information you won't get elsewhere. One of the things, you know, that people are saying, and I just can't believe this is true, and that is that the Federal Reserve System is planning on turning out $2 trillion worth of currency. Now, the entire currency in the world today is about $700 billion. And the idea, in fact, the M1 is about $1.3 trillion. The M2 is up maybe $5 trillion. I can't imagine the Fed turning out $2 trillion. Do you think that's a true story? Do you think that somebody's putting us on?
First of all, I don't believe it, because I know the people who run the organization that came up with the information. And the power behind the organization, to me, is extremely disreputable. And so I look at it at a very jaundiced eye.
I think there's a conscious effort to get the American people confused so they can't really see what's going on, and then putting out stories, you know, that if you pick them up and use them, you become discredited.
Exactly, and I happen to know the people involved, but one particular person in that organization is a criminal, and I just think they're trying to boost the hits that they get on their site, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, there's no verification.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to have to wrap up this evening's program for our listeners. And let me remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're dependent on you to help us. We do have some great things from a financial point of view. We have a little pamphlet we put together called The History of Money. It's a series of five of my newsletters. We have a DVD. It's called The Coming Financial Crisis. We carry Ed Griffin's wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which everybody should read. We carry Professor Sutton's book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and a little book which I read some 40 years ago called Fiat Money Inflation in France, which tells you what happened in France after 1789 when they did exactly what we're doing today. And I think you'll find it's like deja vu all over again. If you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this battle. So until we're together again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for callers. We're going to have Bob with us for about 25 minutes before we have to let him go. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. He's one of the few people I know who's been doing this longer than I have. He's been involved since the late 1950s. I got involved in the early 1960s. And Bob certainly has an excellent grasp of what's happening financially. He was involved in the stock market and stock trading and really for many years. And now he writes his newsletter trying to keep us abreast of what's going on. So, Bob, certainly I share your concern about what's happening with immigration. I can see how the illegal immigrants, of course, they never call them illegal. They always call them immigrants. But how the illegal immigrants are being manipulated to their own destruction, but also to the detriment of everybody here in this country. And the real people who are responsible for what's going on, and those are the gigantic corporations that employ them in violation of the law, seem to be above the law. So pick up your story. What are some of the other things you're concerned about? What about this rather dramatic rise of gold and silver we've seen over the last 2 weeks?
You know, what's been building up for many, many years. It started in August the 15th, 1971, when they did away with the gold backing on the U.S. dollar. And it's been downhill ever since. That move allowed them to continue to endlessly create paper, money, and credit. And it allowed them to continue to stay in power, so to speak. And it doesn't matter what political party, because there's no difference between the two major parties. It's just a question of who's getting paid off and who isn't, or who belongs to the conspiracy and who doesn't. So the evolution of planned inflation, which is the deception that's used to remove wealth from people. There's two things that are done. Number one is excessive taxation. And number two, the devaluation of the currency. And this is nothing new. It goes down, you can go back to Lydia, which was 5,000-7,000 years prior to the birth of Christ. We've been seeing the same thing over and over and over again. And in the last century, in the last 1,000 years, every attempt by, the insiders, the elitists, the people who are involved in conspiracy, they have failed time after time after time in their effort to implement world government. But one of the ways that they do that is to put any kind of opposition into a position where they have to be subservient because they don't have any choice. And I saw this process start to evolve around 1980. I first wrote about it in 1967, but in 1980 they really got to work on it, and that is the deliberate destruction of the American economy. They couldn't get Americans to agree to world government and world subservience, so they had to destroy their economy to get them to go along with the program.
And Joe, they're doing a good job with that as they send our factories overseas, as they send our many of our best jobs overseas, bringing people from other countries to take a good paying jobs. But even more than that, so many of the factories that have remained here are owned by foreign corporations. Most Americans don't understand that we've allowed others to buy up so much of the wealth of this nation. Go ahead, Bob.
As far as the the financial situation is concerned, and you first brought up gold and silver in this segment, and historically, that's been the only place that you've been able to go throughout history to keep whatever assets you have together. And in some cases, in history, it's been very profitable. And that's why in excavations in many European cities and even in the countryside today and throughout the Middle East as well, some will be building a new building and they'll uncover, you know, five or six or one catch of gold and silver that people had buried in the event of the catastrophe. And more often than not, the catastrophe came and they get killed, so they never accessed the wealth that they had hidden. And so it's the only way that you can preserve your wealth under these circumstances. And so gold is going up because people are fleeing currencies, all of them, not just the dollar. Dollar happens to be, in the major currencies, the one that's the worst off. But others will all follow. And on a charting basis, gold is broken out against all the major currencies and most others as well. And so the destruction of fiat currencies is underway. And when you have major nations on average increasing money and credit by about 10%, they're all doing it. You know that that's where they're all headed. They want deflation, but when they want it. Now, what's gone on in Washington vis-a-vis the situation in Iraq, and that they have to put things off for 4 or 5 or 6 years or something like that, then they're going to have to pull back and not pull the plug on the world economy immediately. They'll go through another episode like they did in 1978, 79, and 80, where gold and silver went up. Inflation went to 13.5%, which was official inflation, when in fact it was well over 20%. And the prime rate went up to 21.5%. Most people don't remember that, because they weren't in the business that I was in, which was investment banking and stock brokers and things like that. And, you know, I was very aware of it and wrote about it. But most people just didn't never understand. And we're headed into that right now. That's the best.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And he's saying that, of course, he thinks that we're going to see the point where they're going to have to raise the interest rates up to try to control the inflation, pointing out that the real interest rate got up to almost 21.5% back in, was that 79 or 80?
It was in 1981.
1981,
okay. To get up to that level, or late 1980.
Okay.
But the best that the elitists can hope for now is a repetition of that. And then they'll have to go on 4 or 5 years later and try to make their move to implement world government. This is not a cyclical thing, although it might seem to be. What it is, it's varied and continual attempts to institute international corporatist fascism, which we'll call one world government or the new world order. And that's what they're up to. And I can tell you the guys at the top are really mad because Washington has made such a mess out of this. I mean, they'd had everything in place, and we've got Bubus Americanus in the White House with his merry band of idiots, and they've just made a mess of things, which is very, very good. It's just like world trade. They're in an impasse, and it looks like WTO is going to fall apart. Well, I think that's the best thing that ever happened to the world. But they've also made a mess out of that as well. But that's all in our favor. That means that we probably will have a very bad recession, but perhaps not a depression right now. But it all depends on how it plays out. Nothing is certain. I can be incorrect. These are educated guesses made based upon psychopolitical warfare.
Well, now tell
this
us, what
this is not a science, it's an art.
Oh, now let's talk a little bit. My understanding is that certainly the central banks are actually purchasing gold, which they have not traditionally done, but that Russia is increasing their gold holdings and China is increasing their gold holdings. And is that correct?
That's right, because China and Russia and India, some Middle Eastern countries, and there's Argentina, there's South Africa, and they realize what's going on, and they don't know whether they want to be part of this process. Certainly Russia and China don't. And they want to do their own thing. And they know that the gold that's being sold by central banks, which belongs to the people of each and every country, is being purchased by the same people who are ordering the sale. And so they're building up their gold reserve as individuals and corporations.
You know, I was
don't think that they're not.
I was very interesting, Bob. I'm putting together a talk on finances, and I went up on the website of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and they were commenting that they hold one quarter of all the gold in the world. Now, it's not all their gold. It belongs to central banks throughout the world, but they actually hold it the equivalent of, what was it, about $600 billion that valued at $301 an ounce. So I figure that's pretty close to about $1 trillion that they have in gold. But that's a quarter of all the gold there is in the world, at least according to them. And they sort of move it around from one pile to another. If Germany sells gold, why, Great Britain buys it, and then they just move the gold around. But it doesn't move. But here's where a quarter of the gold in the world is, right there, with the first, with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York City. I really had no idea, of course, the amount of gold that they were holding. But they're holding it for all the other countries in the world, too.
Well, first of all, they're holding it for individuals as well.
Right.
And one of the things that dispels that is that over the last 8 or 9 years, there's been a tremendous physical demand for gold from people, particularly in India, in the Middle East, and now China. And that demand is driven by, of all things, women, wives who want, you know, something to lean back on. And so they're the ones who have been driving the price of the metal. And, of course, people in all those countries know that historically their currencies have been debased or devalued. And so historically they're sticking with gold, which is part of their culture. And so much of the sales of gold that haven't been bought by the insiders themselves have ended up in the hands of these people who are the wives of laborers and farmers and people like that. So, ironically, the elitists have gotten stopped in their tracks by a bunch of little people throughout the world that they'd never figured on. And so anyway, this is going to continue, and those figures that the Federal Reserve gives to what's held there are bogus. And the reason why is that a lot of the gold that nations say that they hold, they no longer hold, and the little people have bought it. And secondly, a lot of gold that they have, which has been leased out to bullion banks, is carried on the books of the Fed, or the books of the country's central banks themselves, as still being in place, which of course is a lie. Because when you lease gold, they have gold, let's say Germany has gold, and it leases $1 billion worth of gold to J.P. Morgan Chase in New York, they immediately sell it. So the gold's gone. Now somebody has it. Maybe somebody, you know, made jewelry of it, or whatever they did with it. It's gone. And so the figures that you're getting are incorrect. There's 31 tons of gold in official hands. My guess is that they have sold half of that, which would be about 16,000 tons. And I figure that they've leased enough in addition to leave about I think it's 5 million tons. That's all that's left. So the figures that you're getting are all incorrect.
All right, fine. So basically they want to control the gold because they know that is what really gives the basis of all wealth.
Nobody knows it better than they do.
And so, you know, the one thing is they don't want for the people to hold gold because that protects them from the ravages of inflation. And the international financiers use inflation to impoverish the people and then control them, of course. But, of course, the thing is that they can't completely control India today. They can't completely control China today. And so they're having some difficulty maintaining the control over all these countries in the world because some of them don't go along with the international financiers' agenda. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And, you know they've lost control again. They've been suppressing the gold price since 1987. First unofficially and then officially. And officially through the executive order, which was directed and promulgated by Ronald Reagan. And it allows the functioning of the working group and financial markets, which is supposed to be used in emergencies, so that we wouldn't have another episode like 1987 when the stock market fell out of bed. And, of course, what they do and have done since then, particularly starting in the about 1993-94, they've used that operation along with the Fed's repo pool, which I won't go into in detail. But anyway, it allows them to use about between the two groups $500 billion a day in rigging markets. And that's what they've been doing. That's why the stock market hasn't gone down. And it's very, very difficult to rig the bond market because it's enormously bigger than the stock market. And so that's something that they just have to live with. And, but I think the whole thing has gotten out of their hands. And, gold and silver are not totally without being rigged from time to time now, but they can't do it as strenuously and as successfully as they had in the past. They'll come in and they'll short the market in gold. We'll take gold as an example. And they might be able to drive it down $50. And then they'll cover and take profits. And then the market goes right back up again. And we have a unique situation in the gold market right now. There's room in the gold market, in the futures market, for 150,000 contracts without the market getting overbought. Those are a lot of contracts. At the same time, they have record short positions, and the shorts can't get out because every time the gold starts to correct downward and they try to cover by buying the gold back in, which they've already sold that they didn't own, they can't do it. I mean, they get some shorts covered. Yesterday they covered, the day before yesterday they covered, it was this morning. They covered 7,500 or something like that contracts. But, you know, there's another 325,000 outstanding. And so they can't control it anymore.
Well, I think, of course, the people who understand that can certainly benefit if they position themselves. Of course, they should have done it before, but a lot of people are going to say, well, it's too late. I don't think it's too late at all. I think we're on the just on the very beginning of a great upswing in the price of gold. What do you think?
I agree completely. We haven't even completed phase one yet.
And are you thinking of the three-phase advance then?
Three or four. Depends upon how crazy the market gets.
And, of course, the gold stocks have been moving up a little, and silver stocks, but not very much, really, if you look at it all in all. We're going to be back here in just a moment. And I will let you go right about after this break is over here, Bob. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're talking about what's happening really to the financial markets. And Bob will be with us for about 5 minutes, and then our producer will get Rodney Stitch on the line. So, Bob, certainly gold has been moving very well, hit 590, backed off a little bit, but it's still getting awfully close to $600 an ounce. And really the same thing is true as far as silver. It was really approaching $12 an ounce. I haven't seen it at that level in what, almost 20 years.
22 to be exact.
Okay, well, you can remember those things better than I can. So certainly we're seeing dramatic changes in the price of precious metals, and it almost looks, as Bob says, and I'm firmly convinced it's true, is because we brought prosperity to India and China and many of these other countries, that these people are actually going into the market and trying to get something to protect their currency, because they're a lot smarter than the American people. They don't believe in the value of paper money. They don't believe that they can trust the government. They want something material to give them some degree of security. So pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, one of the tragedies of this whole affair so far in the upward movement of gold and silver over the past few years has been that virtually no Americans, Canadians, or Europeans are involved. I mean, less than 1%. And that tells you that people either don't understand what's going on or don't care to understand. And it also is very, very bullish for gold and silver. And the reason why is all these people are still potential buyers. And the greatest amount of liquid capital in the world is in those three entities. And if they start buying big time, the price is going to go ballistic. And I'm looking at the end of phase one at $850 gold, phase two at $1,700 an ounce, phase three at $3,500. And that's usually where it ends. But when you have a situation like this, and there's no other alternative because all currencies are fiat, then you might have a situation where it could go to $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 an ounce. We don't know. Nobody knows. But when all those people out there who aren't in want to get into the craze, so to speak, that's when they'll come in. And they will take gold to heights like they have many, many other things where gold really shouldn't be.
Of course, the thing that worries me is so many people are going to lose their whole life savings, everything they've worked for, the things that they think are going to give them security in their old age. I'm afraid so many people are going to be wiped out financially.
Well, I think probably at least a third of the people in the industrialized, advanced world, so to speak, the first world, will lose everything.
And, of course, so many people are just not going to have the pensions they've been planning on, the JM workers, Delphi workers, Ford workers. I mean, certainly most of our major manufacturing are simply going to move overseas, go into Chapter 11, and just leave their workers there, high and dry, because there's really nothing that they can do about it. Airlines,
etc. No, there isn't. And they've all broken their contracts. It's incredible what they're getting away with. And then the government's going to
hold on to right there, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to have Bob. I'm going to let you wrap things up so we can get our regularly scheduled guest on the line here. And then, of course, we'll be talking to tomorrow, the next day. I guess maybe it's, I forgot whether it's Thursday or Friday we have you scheduled, but we're looking forward to having you later in the week in the afternoon program. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
It's Friday.
Okay.
It's Friday.
Go ahead. What are your parting thoughts? Right. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I think we kind of covered the highlights. I see Mr. DeLay is not going to run for re-election, and this end up 20 or 30 people are going down with him. You know, it's just one scandal after the other, and they're all hooked up with the neocons, and this includes Democrats as well as Republicans. And the scandals are just going to get worse and worse and worse. We got the Enron trial going on. We got the SEC. trying to intimidate reporters. The things that are going on in Washington couldn't get any worse. And that's why we end up publishing 40 or 50 or 60 pages a week, because we're telling you things and explaining things that nobody else understands or you can't get.
Okay, well, why don't
you give television and radio, et cetera.
Why don't you give our telephone number one more time before we let you go?
Okay, that is toll free, 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188.
And, of course, let me tell our listeners out there that I look forward every week to getting the international forecast. In fact, I didn't get it this week. I actually had to email Bob, and they were nice enough to send me. I think maybe I missed it when one of the emails he sent me. I probably didn't pull down the forecast. Anyway,
God, you probably deleted it when you deleted the stuff from the ACLU.
Right. God bless. Thanks so much, Bob. We'll talk to you on Friday.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Okay, fine. And now let's go to Rodney. He says, hi, Rodney. Thanks so very much for hanging on. We had a little mix-up as far as our first guest was concerned. But thank you so very much for being patient with us and for coming on. Our guest now is Rodney Stitch, who is a fascinating individual. He has written, how many books have you written, Rodney?
I think it's 12 of them now. Of course, several of them were multiple editions.
Right. Well,
in other words, a few of them have been the third and fourth edition, but there's 12 books out now.
All right, fine. And they're fascinating books. We carry three of them, and we'll tell you how to get the others. But Rodney has been on the front lines of this battle to expose what's going on. Many people who work for the CIA and the DEA and the FBI and all sorts of government agencies have come to him so that he can get out the information that they're incapable of getting out or they're afraid to get out. And so Rodney certainly has actually been sent to prison for what he's done. Simply, what was his crime? Why, he reported, a criminal activity to the federal government, and they didn't want to hear it. They put a federal order in, a federal edict that he was never to file another suit, and he filed the suit, and they sent him to prison for filing a suit, which was his obligation under the law, because he was well aware he was one of the chief federal investigators of airline accidents, but he had the audacity to try to do what was right. Well, anyway, since then, and of course, maybe this is the way God planned it, because Rodney's had the opportunity to have people from all across the country come to him, give him the information. He's put it in books, and a wonderful source of information. Are you reaching more and more people with your material? Are lots of people getting the information you have, Rodney?
Yes, especially, after 9/11, it seems like people lost interest in books like Defrauding America and Drugging America, even though these books address matters, corruption in the government of the United States that constitutes the source of greater harm to Americans than the terrorists. However, the books that I have on the Internet that people can download at no charge, and they're the ones related to 9/11 and Iraq, there's been over 33,000 downloads the first 2 months I've had them up. So people are reading those, but they're not reading nowhere near as many on the Drugging America and Defrauding America. And as I just said, more people are harmed by the corruption described in those books than by the terrorists.
And I think it's so important that what Rodney points out, and I believe it's absolutely true, is that there are people, key people of our government, who are involved in the drug trade. Have you ever wondered why, since we occupy and we control Afghanistan, there are more poppies being grown there now than ever before? Oh, they give all sorts of excuses. Oh my goodness, we wiped out the poppy crop. Why, it would be hard on the government and the warlords. No, ladies and gentlemen, the real reason is, because, of course, the CIA operates with drugs, and it raises a tremendous amount of money for their black operations, but we can't let the American people know the truth, can we? Well, Rodney, you go ahead and pick the story up.
Oh, okay. I thought we were in for a break. I'm
well, we are, but no, we talked through the breaks now, so you've got to keep talking.
Oh, okay. Listen, well, one thing we should mention is where they can get a lot of this information. That's at the website called www.defraudingamerica.com. And on that website, there's some not only a list of the books, but some of the books you can get at no charge. But I'm also putting up matters of immediate interest. Like right now, there's a lot of interest in the New York City area in a particular FBI agent who was working with the mafia and who was feeding mafia people the names of government informants who would then be murdered. Now, this was similar to what went on, what was exposed in the Boston area. Now, the reason I put it up is the fact that 3 years earlier, it was a state prosecutor, actually in Brooklyn, who brought the charges against the FBI agent because the feds had been covering up for it all along. But, while these charges were just filed, 3 years ago, I discovered this very same thing, and I discovered it from a mafia member. Actually, it was Gregory Scarpa Jr., and he wrote me letters describing how the FBI agent was providing him and his father the names of government informants, and then his father would go and murder him. And things like that. So I thought, well, this is serious. So I write a letter, several letters to members of Congress. Those letters are on the internet site, and advising them that I had a source that used to be in the mafia that has considerable information about FBI involvement. Well, you know, not a single response did I receive from that letter, and the significance of FBI agents engaging in this type of conduct is far more than just the criminal activities. It shows the culture in the FBI, and this is the same culture, same group that was responsible for protecting the country against the effects of 9/11.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Rodney Stitz. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Rodney Stitz, and we're simply talking about the corruption within the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Actually, Rodney was contacted by the son of one of the mafia dons and told about how the FBI supervisor in New York City was giving them the names of the FBI informants so they could kill them, and the father was killing them. Is the father still alive, or did he die?
He died of age while he was in prison. So his son, Gregory Scarpa Jr., is also in prison. And the reason Gregory Scarpa Jr. came to me, I developed a friendship with, or a relationship with a fellow in prison who was a mobster in Las Vegas and also Los Angeles. And he associated with such mobsters as Tony Spilatro. He's the fellow that is in the movie Casino. And he, at any rate, through him, Scarpa came to me. So the two of them provided me a great amount of information about the FBI criminal activities in New York. And that's why I try to get this information to members of Congress. And again, as I found for the last 40 years, you just cannot get members of Congress to do anything when it involves high-level corruption.
And what a tragic situation it is. And we would be far better off without an FBI. And at least we would have a whole flock of smaller police forces. Some would be incompetent. Some would be dishonest. But the sum of them would be honest. And that was why our founding fathers wanted to centralize. I mean, when you have a number of private police forces, some will be good, some will be bad. But when you have a corrupt FBI that's corrupt at the very top, the whole organization is corrupt, and you cannot trust it. We know what happened in Boston. Any of you who haven't read the book Deadly Alliance, and of course it's the story of Whitey Bulger, and how for 20 years he was allowed to torture and murder people, and we're talking about at least 20 that we know of, probably many more than that, with the full knowledge and cooperation of the FBI. They consistently covered for him, and they discouraged any effort on the part of the local authorities, the police authorities, who wanted to arrest Whitey Bulger, for his crimes. And it was only when, of course, there was a determined local law agency was going after him, that Whitey Bulger simply disappeared. He's one of the most wanted men in the world. But the FBI's agent, who was really doing exactly what he was told to do by headquarters, they left him out to dry, and he's serving time in prison. I suspect that he was no more culpable than the people at the highest echelons of the FBI, who knew they were sending innocent people to prison to cover for Whitey Bulger. It doesn't make sense.
And this fellow you're talking about is Richard Tosh. And Tosh was describing, you know, Tosh used to work under the VGO, DiVincio being the crooked FBI agent. And Tosh was telling me how DiVincio would repeatedly order him off investigations into mobsters or into activities involving the CIA. And he feels that people high up in government were responsible for covering up for what was going on.
And this was the FBI agent who was telling you that?
Yes, this is former FBI agent Richard Tosh. He's the one who was a highly decorated Vietnam pilot. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Air National Guard, and he was a FBI special agent, and he was discovering elements of Ali North's enterprise and the involvement in illegal arming and funding of Iraq during the 1980s. And so his superiors kept taking him off assignments and also covering up, and so he went and made a complaint to members of Congress. And after he did that, then the FBI and the DOJ made false charges against him. And, of course, members of Congress who he had contacted continued the cover-up. Oh, it's a hell of a situation.
And you've actually written a book based upon what he told you?
Yes, and it's called The FBI, CIA, the Mob, and Treachery, and that's listed on the website.
And these are really fascinating books, and of course a lot of the information comes from the agents themselves who've come to Rodney to get the information, the story out. This is the information you're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, or you're not going to see these stories on 2020 or on 60 Minutes, because there are certain things that you are to know, but most of it you're not to know.
You know, there was another one of my books, actually two of my books, is based upon considerable information given to me by the head of a secret CIA operation that was based in Honolulu. And he gave me about 8 boxes of classified CIA documents that really revealed a great amount. But in those documents, there was a note which listed the names of 6 different people who had bank accounts funded by this company. And 2 of the names in there were Richard Armitage and George Bush Sr. And with the information was the code name for both of these current politicians.
But both of them were really CIA operatives, weren't they, in their younger years?
Well, let's see.
Well, I see that both George Herbert Walker Bush and Richard Armitage were CIA operatives during their younger years, weren't they?
Yes, they were at one time. Right. And Armitage was heavily involved in drugs, and that especially while he was in Vietnam. And I have that from several sources who were in Vietnam with him. And so here he has a key position in the government of the United States.
In fact, wasn't he? He was an undersecretary of state, I think, recently. He held a position certainly in the Reagan administration, and I know he's held a very key position in the Bush administration, the second Bush administration.
Yeah, and the same with Negro Ponte. He was involved in covering up for massive human rights violations in Central America during the Reagan-Bush administration. So valuable people like that, you got to keep in government, I guess they figure.
Well, I think we have a real problem, ladies and gentlemen, because we are a nation that's turned its back against God. And if people don't believe in God and believe that God, is aware when they sin, if we don't have people in government who fear God, why, of course, we're going to have a corrupt society. And we have a corrupt society today, and God brings judgment on nations that turn against him. And believe me, America is certainly turned against God. So, I think that why should we be surprised at the degree of corruption we have? I think Rodney's books are so important because they will go into the background, and I think it's so important if we could get the American people to realize one thing, and that is that the CIA has been involved in drugs for so long, and the war on drugs is as phony as the war on poverty or the war on cancer or the war on terrorism. Would you agree or disagree with that, Rodney?
Oh, yes, I think that's so. And they had a lot of help, though. You've got members of Congress who had been repeatedly contacted by government insiders revealing these things. You've got media people who were told, and I've been to media many times, starting when I was a federal agent, giving them insider information, and they all cover up. And this is why in the United States today, we've got so much corruption in key government positions, and all the checks and all the people in the checks and balances are covering up for these things. And that's why the system will not correct itself, and it's up to the people. And so far, they haven't done a very good job of showing any courage here.
Well, our job is to let them know. We can't make them have courage, but we can certainly motivate them to do what's right. Rodney, I want to get your website out again and how people can get in touch with you.
Right, that's www.defraudingamerica.com.
That's www.defraudingamerica.com. That's Rodney's website. We recommend it to you. We recommend his books. In fact, we carry three of them. That's Unfriendly Skies, Drugging America, and Defrauding America. And Rodney has nine other books as well. So, but go to his website, get his information, understand what we are really up against, because this rottenness goes to the very, very heart of so many of our federal agencies. And we're talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which most people think is a great organization, and I'm sure there's some good people in it. In fact, you've run into a fair number of good people in the FBI, haven't you?
Oh, yes. But the thing is, key people and key positions are what corrupt these organizations, and then the people who try to do their job they're retaliated against. I found that out in the government's aviation safety offices, and that sends a message to others: keep your mouth shut.
And, of course, what happens is they get put the most corrupt people into key positions, and they, of course, then will not allow the people who are guilty of some terrible and horrendous crimes ever to be punished for them. I mean, they can kill people, and nothing is ever done. And they've done it over and over and over again, whether it was at Ruby Ridge, and nobody was ever punished for killing Randy Weaver's wife or his son. They paid him $3 million to keep him quiet, but nobody was ever punished. And the same thing happened at Waco. They sent in a special forces team to kill the women and children. And, of course, if you haven't seen the films we have where they've interviewed the people who talked to the special forces people, you know, who had actually done the killing. But they were told to go in and kill, and that's what special forces people are expert at. They're experts at killing. And then, of course, they did the same thing at Oklahoma City. There were other people involved. We've never been told the truth. They did the same thing at 911. And more people die. Each one, you know, each incident, more and more and more people die. They lied to us what happened to Downing at TWA 800 in 1996. And, you know, this was a missile attack. We don't know what it was, but we do know that the government lied about that. And if we have people in government that lie, then no man's life or property or family are safe. How are we going to get people to get involved and do something, Rodney?
I don't know. I keep trying to get people to read the books because they're written in such a way that it helps to explain and understand the corruption in government and why they do not, why the public doesn't hear about it. And by reading a few of them, it gives you a much better understanding what actually goes on and to understand all of the lying and cover-ups that occurs today.
Well, of course, your friend who was actually head of the bank, the CIA bank in Hollywood, in Hawaii, that Sidney replaced the Guggenheim bank. What was it? A hand, wasn't it?
Well, let's see. Yeah, that was the BBRDW CIA operation in Honolulu, and that took over from the Nugent Hand Bank when that folded, and then another bank before that.
Well, now, of course, were they handling drug money? What were they doing for the CIA?
Well, now, he's what you call a titular, I guess that's the pronunciation, head of the operation, but he had all of these CIA people working out of the operation, and some were involved in drug smuggling, and some were involved in hiding money for Ferdinand Marcus, and they were arranging to get military equipment for some countries that were forbidden to get the equipment by U.S. laws. So they were doing all types of corrupt conditions.
And these are all CIA operatives then?
Oh, yes.
And of course, this fellow, working for the CIA, when it became apparent that this was there was a lot of hanky panky going on in the bank, he was actually then convicted and sent to prison. And what was his crime? Well, he was a loyal CIA employee, did what he was told.
Here's what happened: Honolulu television reporter discovered there were some irregularities in the COVID operation, so she started publicizing it on a television program. And at that time, they didn't know it was CIA. So what the CIA did, they made the decision then to pull all the money out, remove all the records, and then charge Rewald with embezzling the money. And then during the trial, he was denied the right to bring in the CIA people that he worked with. He was denied the right to produce CIA documents, and these are the documents I eventually got hold of. And so he was sentenced to federal prison from 30 to 80 years. And at the end of 10 years, when he came up for a parole hearing, I and some other people put in our comments, and he got released then. But this was a terrible injustice to him.
How does he make a living today?
Well, he's a, let's see, what do you call it? He's working for a casting agency in Hollywood, and he has a very responsible position there.
All right, fine. But, of course, you never got a pension or anything. The CIA, and this is when you work for these agencies, you know, if you become a liability for one reason or another, they'll just simply abandon you. They abandoned 1,000 CIA employees in Laos at the end of the Second World War. None of them were ever repatriated. They're still rotting in the prisons over there.
Well, you can't take the CIA at its word. I had a phone call a couple hours ago from a former member of the KGB who defected to the United States, and the CIA promised him income and all. He's 65 years of age, has no income, no Social Security. The CIA went back on their word, and the poor guy is really having it rough.
Well, I think this is a great tragedy of today. When you have corrupt people in a government, at the highest levels of our government, then no man's life or property or family are safe. We'll be back in just a moment. I welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, I guess this evening is Rodney Stitz, and Chris Rodney's been writing books for many years. He has contacts with people, and I know some of these people. I knew Gunther Rosbacher, who Rodney was very, very close to until Gunther passed away here, I guess, about 10 months ago. But he was really one of the most fascinating, James Bond-type characters I've ever met. Wasn't he a fascinating individual?
Oh, by all means. And the book, Defrauding America, goes into all types of operations in which he was involved. And one of the first that I discovered that he was involved in was October Surprise. And he was present at many of the meetings that were held. He gave me the names of people who were at these meetings, where they were held. And he's describing how military equipment was removed from Air National Guard units in the United States and shipped to Iran as part of the secret negotiations to delay the release of those 52 American hostages.
And I think that's what's important. The whole idea was not to get the hostages released, was to get them not released. In other words, to have the Iranians hold them another 3 or 4 months until after Ronald Reagan was elected and inaugurated. I mean, but how can you tell the American people that our leaders would actually conspire against our American hostages, not trying to get them released, but trying to keep them in prison?
And, you know, it's so strange to believe that Ronald Reagan, and I used to think, Jesus, he's such a nice person, but he was involved in the, he knew about the October Surprise. It helped get him elected. He knew about the secret arming of Iraq and Iran. Of course, he was associated with the sabotage of the Nicaraguan government, and that Contra operation had a heavy amount of drug trafficking in it. Arms going to Central America and drugs coming back, landing at military bases, landing at DEA facilities, which helps to show that the drug smuggling wasn't just people in the CIA. It took people in the military bases and at DEA facilities, and of course with all these other intelligence agencies we had, they must have known what was going on.
Of course they did, but of course if they want to live well, they'll be quiet. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Rodney Stitz. And Rodney, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. And again, that website is www.defraudingamerica.com. That's defraudingamerica.com. We recommend Rodney's material to you. Good night. God bless, Rodney.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Rodney is he's even older than I am. He's been at this for a long, long time. I mean, he was a pilot during the Second World War, actually. Was a Navy pilot at that time. And so you can imagine how old he's in his 80s. But he's on the front line trying to awaken the American people. Do you really care about your freedom? Do you really have any idea what it would be like to live without freedom? well, we're going to lose our freedom unless there are enough people in this country who care, and we do everything we can. I work 5 hours a day without any salary at all, just trying to awaken the American people, and we do hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us in this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. I will mention that I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the next 4 days. I'll be speaking tomorrow night at the Freedom Forum, on Thursday night at the Granada Forum, on Wednesday, Thursday afternoon at a private a meeting on Saturday at Yurok. So if any of you would be interested in coming, you can always call or exchange for information at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we would mention we are still offering cases of our book, hopefully by the end of this week. First and next week, we'll be able to close that. If you'd like to get a case of my books, Brotherhood of Darkness, at a very, very reasonable cost, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, we hope that you'll get them, that you'll get them out. You'll help us to disseminate the truth, because truth is our only real weapon. And until people understand the spiritual aspect of the battle we're involved in, they can't be effective. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there on the Internet 5 hours a day. You can get links to the satellite, listen 9 hours a day, and you won't get a thing accomplished, but you'll get an awful lot of great information. And then, of course, look at the various books we have. We have all sorts of books that have been suppressed. The last thing they want for the American people to understand is that nothing is as it appears to be. There's a small group of very wealthy people who want to control the world, who are energized by truly demonic and satanic forces, and they work through a number of organizations, but they're all energized by evil. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on, the coming war with Iran, the coming collapse of our economy, a spread of diseases unnecessarily throughout our society. We already have Lyme disease and AIDS and chronic fatigue and certainly so many diseases that have been genetically engineered. If you doubt that, you need to get my talk and the documentation and the planned population reduction. It's available in video or DVD. My talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, on Iraq, the Untold Story, on the World Revolution. I recommend that one specifically because it has on it an interview I did in 1980 with Ambassador Smith. I think it was. And anyway, Ambassador Smith. Well, we're out of time. We'll have to tell you later. Please pray for America and Radio Liberty.